This is largely work of Ando, Hopkins, and Strickland. Unfortunately, only pieces of it are published. Sorry, I amused myself by trying to piece everything together. But I want to, really what I want to do is I want to give a way of thinking about what it is that they show. And I think the way I'm going to do this is to actually not say too much about Morava E theory, but rather consider a much more elementary version of the theory, which I think is instructive. I'm going to actually think about things like equivariant K theory. So this will be section one, equivariant K theory. And then section two will be Morava E theory. I'm going to show you something. It's actually a well-understood story about the kinds of operations you have on things like equivariant K theory. It's very classical. I mean, everything I'm going to say is proved in the 70s. I'll throw a stack in it. That's the only new thing. It's a conference on stacks. Got to have a stack in it. But I'll use that as a model for what we should do in the Morava E theory case. Sensible thing to do. So I'm thinking about the following kinds of things. So if I have a compact Lie group, then I have some functor on G spaces, KG0 of X. This is the G equivariant G. This is the G equivariant K theory of the G space X. This made an appearance in Jacob's talk. And I want to think about the kinds of operations that exist on this theory and ones like it. Actually, secretly, what I have in mind is I don't want to fix the group. I want to let the group vary. So secretly, I'm really thinking about, I guess, what you would call orbifold K theory. Take some kind of orbifold thing and gives you some kind of group. If it's a translation orbifold, you're supposed to recover equivariant K-theory. So I'll tell you about some operations. This is a classical story that goes back all the way to Grothendieck even. Definition. So a lambda ring is a commutative ring A together with some operations, these are functions called lambda k on A. These are functions satisfying a bunch of axioms, and I guess for some kind of completeness, I'll list some. So there's a bunch of axioms like lambda 0 is 1, lambda 1's the identity, lambda k of the unit is 0. And then the key axioms tell you, you have these operations. Oh, this board doesn't move? Okay. And there are rules for computing the lambda of a sum, the lambda of a product, and if I can fit it here, the composite of lambdas. In each case, there's a rule. This one you can write out. Lambda I of A, lambda K minus I. And the other two, I don't really want to write out. There's some generating function that produces these. These are really some kind of polynomials in basic lambda operations. Some determined polynomial. So that's the structure of a lambda ring. I think classically it's called a special lambda ring or something. But I'll just call it a lambda ring. Okay. So equivariant K theory carries the structure of a lambda ring because, as you've probably realized, lambda K corresponds to the operation on bundles of taking exterior power. There's actually a little bit more I want to throw in. Let's say a lambda ring, I'll call it a lambda ring with involution, is a lambda ring A together with one more piece of data, which is a homomorphism of lambda rings, which I'll call psi minus 1, and square it, it's the identity. So, in terms of, so this was, I don't think I said it, this is complex K theory. So, I have complex conjugation of bundles. So, psi minus 1 in this theory corresponds to complex conjugation. Okay. So, there's this category of lambda rings with involution, and this actually captures most of the structure of operations on this, these theories. Let me make a definition that we'll show. I'll just write lambda. Let's use a fat lambda category of lambda rings with involution. Anyone who's learned about K-theory is familiar with this structure in some level. Okay? So, if you remember, well, Jacob's talk made the following idea very clear. If there's sort of one very important example of a group that I should actually write down here, I should think about the S1 equivariant K-theory of a point, which was this Laurent polynomial ring, and, well, this is the ring of functions on the multiplicative group scheme. Now, the moral of the story ought to be that any sort of fact I'd like to know about this theory should be something that I can recover or should have to do with the geometry of the multiplicative group. So this is the question I want to ask. Let's say all I know about K-theory is that it has something to do with the multiplicative group. How do I discover the category of lambda rings with operation, with involution? So question. How do we recover from GM viewed as a group scheme over the integers? Implicitly, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have some process that takes some kind of group scheme over the integers or group scheme over something, formal group, whatever, and recovers something, some category, which will be the candidate for operations. Something like this happens for Morava E theory. That's the moral of the talk. But let me say exactly what happens in K theory, the clearest case. Are there questions so far? Okay. So I have to have a stack. Okay. Let's call it M. So let me look at my notes. You can tell I'm not very comfortable about stacks. I say stack and I immediately have to go for my notes. Let me say this just sort of roughly. This is going to be it's going to classify the following moduli problem. I'll be more specific in a minute. So the objects that I want to classify are group schemes locally isomorphic to the multiplicative group, green scheme, and then morphisms will be isogenies. That word locally means there's some topology around it. It actually plays no role, really, in what I want to talk about. You can think of it as the Atal topology, I suppose. It's not crucial. Sorry? Isogenies are not invertible. So you've noticed that this is not a stack in the sense of something fibrate in groupoids. It's a stack in the sense of something fibrate in categories. So it's a sort of fibrate in categories over, I don't know, schemes, I guess. So it's a little... Yes. Is that piles? I think that's... You want to claim credit? So this is the pile of formal groups, a pile of the multiplicative group and isogenies. I have to say locally, of course, because there's some kind of... If I want to say I have a stack and not a pre-stack, I have to stackify. This is not terribly relevant for the way I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it in a very, very stupid way. So it's a category fibered in categories. So let's just make a, let's just sort of try to understand this in the following way. So I might want to look at morphisms from speck of a ring into M. That itself forms a category now, not a groupoid. And that should be equivalent to, well, the following kind of thing. I'm going to call this MR, so I can refer to it later. So this will be a category whose objects, well, these are G over spec R. This is a group scheme, locally isomorphic to GM in whatever topology I asserted I would have. Yep. Locally in R, yeah, in say the atoll topology. Although I think for this example, I could actually profitably consider the trivial topology for what I need to do. But let's just. And morphisms are going to be isogenies. That is, homomorphisms that are, I don't want to say this, they're finite. Okay. That's that category. And I want a category of sheaves. And this, I guess I'll take this away. Okay. So, I want to look at the category of quasi-coherent sheaves of rings on this guy. So let's let, I'll just call a sheaves on M. Those will be the category of quasi-coherent sheaves of Ohm algebras over M. And if you don't know what that means, and I certainly don't, I'll try to say something more explicit. So O here is the structure sheaf. So how should I think of this? Well, if I have a morphism from spec R to M, I should get a sheaf of R algebras, and this one will actually be R. So that's the structure sheaf. So let's say explicitly, so a sheaf should amount to the following data. So, well, if I have a ring, an affine scheme, if you like, then I get a functor from this category of forms of the multiplicative group over R, op, to R algebras. Let's call that A sub R. And then for a morphism of rings, R to R prime, I should get a natural isomorphism from F star compose AR to AR prime compose F star. This is, let's call it A sub F. This is asserting some kind of compatibility with respect to pullback. What's F star? There are two F stars, right? So, well, I can always pull back one of these group schemes along a map in the base. That's that F star. There's also the F star, which is a functor on rings. So it goes from R algebras to R prime algebras, which is just induction. And, well, you know, there should be some coherence. And if I want to have a topology, I have to assert, may have to assert something about that, too. Okay. Okay. For example, there's a gadget which I might call, let's call it fat G. Well, you know, if I have a, so how do I think about this in terms of this language I just introduced? Let's say if I have a particular example of one of these group schemes over spec R, then I should take as the value here the ring of functions on this group scheme. That's an R algebra. that's a natural example of such a sheath. Now, having introduced this stack, I just want to point out that there's really nothing going on here. It's really, you know, I introduced all this structure, but, you know, after all, these are things that are locally isomorphic to the multiplicative group, but the multiplicative group exists over spec Z, and in fact, isogenies of the multiplicative group also all exist over Z. So, in fact, well, let's just write down some examples of isogenies. So in general, let's say I have the multiplicative group over spec R, I always have the mth power map, where m is an integer, non-zero. And of course, on functions, this is just the map that takes, I should say R here. R takes P to T of the m. It's an isogeny. And in fact, that's defined over the integers, clearly. I need to show one other example of an isogeny, though. If I take this is the Frobenius isogeny. So if R is an FP algebra, then I have a relative Frobenius. So let me actually write that out, just to be clear. So I have this homomorphism, which is a pth power map on R. Now if I have a group scheme, let's say, over spec R, I have the map on spec R induced by phi. I have a similar map on G induced by phi. And the relative Frobenius is this map here. I'll call it Frob, the map on the pullbacks. So that's an isogeny. An isogeny of degree P. In fact, in this case, if I have the multiplicative group, it's always the case that Frobenius is, in fact, brackets P, where it's defined. So in fact, let's just do this over FP. Let's write this over FP itself. And I have Frob from GM to pullback of GM. But over FP, that's GM. And that's equal to the pth power map, because, well, you write down that formula for the pth power map. Okay. That's sort of an accident for the multiplicative group. Now, I have this complicated category of sheaves, but, you know, the objects in this stack are covered by spec Z, by the standard multiplicative group, by definition. So here's an observation. It's called a proposition. The sheaf category is equivalent to the following data. These are rings A together with some ring homomorphisms called psi m. The integer is not equal to z, and psi m composed with psi n is psi m n. These are ring homomorphisms. That's what sheaves in that is, or is supposed to be. Yeah. This is just a category. It's just a ring with structure. So the idea, I have one of these fancy sheaves. What I should do is I should evaluate it at, I guess the notation I used over Z, I take the standard multiplicative group. That's a ring. And then the psi m's are going to correspond to the effect of the mth power isogeny. That's psi m. So this is sort of a very elaborate way to say something very simple. I've only done this because, in the more general context, you can't do this. Simple model. to. So for purposes of analogy, I wanted to introduce that. So that's really the category I wanted. Okay. So here's the Adams functor. Did I use this board? Oh, no. So Adams defined a functor from lambda to sheaves M. Right? So you take a lambda ring and you extract from it the Adams operations. The Adams operations are defined in terms of the lambda. So I take a lambda ring, or a lambda ring with involution, and I'll associate to it the sheaf, which has this property, AZ at GM is A, and psi m's are psi m. And so I'll just write out the formula that defines the Adams operations. For positive m, the psi m's are defined by this formula that he wrote down. So that defines the psi m for m positive. And then psi minus m, we'll just define it to be psi minus 1 composed psi m for m positive. So it's a lambda ring of involution, it carries around a psi minus 1. Yeah, I think I had it up here. It's the category of lambda rings with involution. So there's a psi minus 1 also. So, of course, this formula, this series, really writes the psi m's as some polynomials in the lambdas with integer coefficients. And magically, the psi's are ring homomorphisms, which the lambdas aren't. So that's very nice. But we sort of stare at it and we say, okay, we can extract this structure from our lambda ring with involution. This functor is not especially close to being an equivalence of categories. In some sense, it is rationally. If you have rings that are sort of actual Q algebras, you can recover everything about the lambdas from the size. But in general, you cannot. Here's what you don't have. I can't move that. What's missing is some information related to some congruences. So, let's see what should I say here. Okay. Oh, by the way, I should point out here, after all, I had on the one hand the lambda ring that was the equivariant K3, circle equivariant K3 of a point. Under this functor, this goes to the thing I called OG. It sort of tells you that this was really the right thing to do. It's not a random way to write this category. So if you recall, by their nature, the Adams operations are defined in terms of some integer polynomials in some more fundamental operations, and that implies that the Adams operations satisfy some congruences, of which the key one I need to worry about is this. If I take the pth Adams operation for p prime, this turns out to be congruent to a to the p mod p. Okay. So the only point really in this talk is that you need to encode that congruence on this side of the picture. And I'll do that. So I'll just make the definition. So let's let sheaves upper frob sum together. That's going to be a full subcategory of sheaves on M. Full subcategory of sheaves A, such that, let me say it the following way, if I have a ring, which is an FP algebra, and I take a form of GM, and I look at the Frobenius isogeny of that guy, which is defined, because R is characteristic P, then given that data, I get a diagram. So let me write it like this. C star ARG. I take the value of the sheaf at G, but then that's an R algebra, so I base change it along phi, the pth power map on R. This is isomorphic by this base change rule to AR at phi star of G, which is this. On the other hand, I have a map induced by Frobenius, and the contravariant, so it actually goes this way. And also here, I have something I'll just call Frobenius. These are R algebras, and there's an algebra level relative Frobenius. That's what that is. And the assertion is that this should commute. So, roughly speaking, this is the full subcategory of sheaves for which Frobenius acts as Frobenius. So this little relation, or congruence, I wrote up there, implies exactly that this Adams functor factors through the subcategory. So explicitly, in terms of this description, all I really need to do is check the case R equals FP, and the Frobenius isogeny there, which is also the pth power map. And that's exactly what I wrote there. Okay. So this is a better model for lambda. It's much closer because it encodes this congruence. Is this an equivalence of categories now? No. Still not an equivalence of categories. I can even show you an example that proves it's not in a minute. But let's just state a theorem. Actually, let me make some definitions. So let me define some full subcategories. I'm going to write lambda torsion free. This is the full subcategory of torsion free lambda rings with involution. So it's a flatness. It's torsion free over Z. And likewise, let's write sheaves frob TF. This is the full subcategory of sheaves A, such that, well, I'm going to make sort of the corresponding requirement. If I take this and evaluate it, say, at the standard multiplicative group, that is a torsion-free E flat Z algebra. So this is also some kind of flatness condition. Those are some subcategories. The theorem, due originally to Wilkerson, so this functor passes to an equivalence of the torsion-free object. So the moral so far is that, well, I didn't quite get this full category of lambda rings with involution, but I got some category of torsion-free objects from the geometry of the multiplicative group. Okay. Well, I guess I'm okay. Let me say a couple of things. Why isn't this an equivalence of categories? Well, there are objects in here which do not come from objects in here. In fact, any lambda ring, no lambda ring can have finite characteristic. Whereas there are certainly objects in here of finite characteristic. Did I give this functor a name? Let's call it psi. So psi is not an equivalence of categories. So on the right-hand side, I could take Z mod n, where the Adams operations act as the identity. That satisfies, something with an action of Adams operation, that satisfies the congruences by Fermat's little theorem or something. But there is no lambda ring structure on Z mod NZ. In fact, in general, in a lambda ring, the integers are a lambda ring. in a unique way. And if you compute the way that lambda acts, lambda n on an integer is given by the binomial coefficient. And so you do some little calculation, like I think lambda n of n, that has to be n choose n, which is 1, but lambda n of 0, by a similar calculation, has to be 0. And so if you try to make n congruent to 0, you've actually made 1 congruent to 0 if you're going to make it a lambda ring. So you can't make z mod nz into a lambda ring. And in general, you can't have finite characteristic lambda rings, whereas you can here. Here, I should say. This is also in some ways a poorly behaved category. It doesn't even have finite limits. It's hard to take a congruent and have it pass to some pullback diagram. Whereas this is an algebraic category and has all small limits and co-limits. So it's a somewhat different character. Let me sort of complete the story by pointing out I can actually obtain lambda from this data. So what do I have here? So I have a forgetful functor. Let's call it U, which will go from the category of torsion-free lambda rings, which is the same by Wilkerson. There's this category of torsion-free sheaves with the Frobenius congruents. And this will go to torsion-free abelian groups. It's a fact, not for free, but it is a fact that this has a left adjunct, which you should think of as taking a torsion-free abelian group and giving you the free lambda ring, it actually does give you the free lambda ring, but I can actually, I can deduce the existence of this, the left adjunct is characterized by something on torsion-free rings. So that gives me a triple, let's call it T prime, this is a monad on torsion-free abelian groups, and I can prolong it to a monad T on all abelian groups by left con extension. And then I discover that, in fact, the category of lambda rings with involution is precisely isomorphic to the category of T algebras. The way I've said it, I mean, it's not the way you prove it. You already know that there's a triple that defines lambda rings. And in fact, that triple, by its nature, takes torsion-free abelian groups to torsion-free lambda rings. And you sort of work backwards and deduce that this is the way the picture worked. But the moral of the story is that I could have recovered this category by some kind of algebraization of this category. I don't want this one, but I have to sort of do this little game. Okay, so that's the story for equivariant K-theory. You know, it's a very classical story, but I think it's what the point of giving this talk is that this sort of tells you what you're supposed to do in other contexts. So I'm going to try to spell out how this works for Moravi E theory. So I'll tell you that context. Okay. Are there questions before I proceed? This is a natural point. So let's discuss Moravi E theory. Let's fix, this is section 2, let's fix a prime P and an N greater than or equal to 1. This will be the height of Rho-formal groups. Now, the context I want to look at here is the following. I'm going to have commutative S algebras. And then I'm going to have a theory, which is Moravi E theory defined on this. You write E from Moravi E theory, the E0. If you paid attention, I only dealt with degree 0 equivariant K theorem. I'm also only going to deal with degree 0 Moravi E theory for the purposes of this talk. And I'll put a question mark here. This question mark is going to be the ideal target category for this functor. The functor here is Moravi E theory, which is to say, of height n. So this will be the complex orientable theory associated to deformations of some height and formal group, one-dimensional formal group. So this functor takes R, a ring, to the E homology of that ring spectrum. So the question is, what are the natural operations on this functor? Which is to say, what is the natural description of the target category? And in particular, can I describe that target category in terms of the geometry? So question, can we describe, question mark, in terms of groups? Answer seems to be yes. Before I sort of plunge in, I think what I'll do, because I don't have very much time, I'll just describe the analogous stack that's appropriate here and analogous category of sheaves. And if I have time at the end, I can say how this functor is defined and why this might be true. But if I'm lucky, I'll run out of time before I do that. Before I proceed, there are two kinds of operations I need to worry about. And in topology, you kind of see them separately. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put everything together. This is sort of a little bit artificial from the way that you get them out of topology. So on the one hand, I have the stable operations. So this is the thing that we classically think about as what's given by the Morava stabilizer group. And the way I'm going to have it is going to be very nicely encapsulated by the Hopkins-Miller theorem, this particular family of operations. And this is a well-understood story at this point. The other part are what are called the power operations. And I said before, this is what's been studied by Ando, Hopkins, and Strickland. I shouldn't say that's the answer, but that's the kind of structure I have to deal with. All right, let me try to describe a moduli problem. It's going to be a deformation story. So I'm going to let R, script R, this will be some category of test objects. So this will be a category of Artinian local rings. Such that, let's say, R mod M is perfect of characteristic P. This is the test objects that I want. And the morphisms will be local homomorphisms, I guess. Let me write, since I'll need it, I'll write pi for the map to the residue field. So I'll again have a moduli problem, which I'll call M. Stack or a pile or what have you. This will be fibered in categories over this category of test objects. So if I have a ring, let's just say it like this, MR, the objects are going to be one-dimensional formal groups commutative G over spec R such that if I reduce to the residue, if I pass to the residue field, that has height N. And then the morphisms are arbitrary isogenies. Okay. Huh. So, in particular, for any two formal groups over spec R in this category, there's a set of maps between them. That actually is going to have a topology we need to take this into account if we think about Mojave E theory. Because Mojave E theory is really a theory that wants to take values in some kind of topological range. So I'll try to do this this way. Remark. So if I take MR and look at two objects, that has a topology. Well, I won't write it out. If you have two different isogenies, you can write them in terms of a coordinate on the formal group, and so they'll be close if the two isogenies agree to order n. So order x to the n in terms of some coordinate x. These are close if alpha of x tangent to beta x mod some large power x to the n. And that will define, for these purposes, will define topology. These are, I'm over Artinian local rings, so these rings are very small. Let's see. Now I want to define a category. She's on M. This is really she's quasi-coherent. She's of O modules. Those are M. Sorry, not modules, algebras. Well, I can write out the same story as before, but there's a one slight subtlety. I'm going to take the topology into account. So an object in here amounts to the following. So if I have an object in my category of test objects, I get a functor, which I called AR. Yes, MR hop to R algebras. But I want this to be continuous. So over here, so I'm looking at algebras over this Artinian local ring. Let's give this the compact open topology, where I'm going to think of A and B as discrete. There's probably an easier way to say what that is. Maybe it's just a profinite topology or something. I'm not sure. And then I'll also have, for a homomorphism, I'll have some natural isomorphism. AF, which are coherent in some way, well, in the obvious way. And then the observation is that, how come I can push this one up, but I can't push up the other one? I'm going to have a functor. This is, let's state this as a proposition. And this really is a proposition known, for instance, to Andrew Hopkins and Strickland, that Mojave E theory defines a functor from commutative S algebras to this category of sheaves. Let me say a little bit about how this is defined, because I sort of have obscured the role of the Mojave E theory spectra. So the idea is that let's take a commutative S algebra B, and now I want to compute E0 of B, and I use this funny script E notice for Mojave E theory. So let's take a formal group G defined over a test ring, spec R. Well, what's this going to be? Well, what I really have are Mojave E theory spectra for every formal group of height N over a perfect field. So what I'll do is I'll take that Mojave E theory spectrum associated to the group pi star of G. And remember, pi star of G is defined over the residue field. That's the special fiber. And I'll take the Moravi-E theory of the ring spectrum. Well, that's an algebra over this ring. This ring classifies deformations. So what I'll do is I'll tensor this with the coefficient ring up to R, where this homomorphism here classifies the deformation. Classify G viewed as a deformation of pi star G. So that's the way the functor works. So what I did is I just put in all the Moravi-E theory spectra together. I mean, we don't just have a single Moravi-E theory, we have a family indexed by exactly by this data of formal groups of height n, which is functorial in the best possible way. Alright, well, the upshot is there's a subcategory of Sheaves M, which is Sheaves Frob M. You can write down the definition. I'll do it here. It's the same thing. So I have a full subcategory, Sheaves Frob M. This is the full subcategory of objects such that, given a test ring which is actually of characteristic P, they're not required to be of characteristic P. If it is of characteristic P, and then I look at the Frobenius isogeny of some G over that guy, then I have this commutative triangle, as before. I'll just write it out again. Here I have AR of G. This is the function defined by the Frobenius isogeny. This is the algebraic relative Frobenius, and that has to commute. So that's the Frobenius congruence condition. And it's an observation, I think also known to Andrew Hopkins and Strickland, that this functor actually factors through this category. E0 factors through this subcategory. Okay. All right. So I want to somehow say that you could recover. So this is a target category for this functor. It's not ideal. It's not an algebraic category. The kind of problem I like to be able to solve with this is the following. So to bring it back to something that's actually topological, if I have a spectrum X, then I have something I'll call P of X, which is the free commutative S algebra on X. I would like to be able to have an algebraic name for the following object. If I take P of X, I would like to compute the Moravi-E theory of that commutative S algebra, together with all possible information about operations. Well, I'd like to compute that in terms of some functor of the Moravi-E theory of the spectrum X. So I've only defined Moravi-E theory for commutative ring spectra, but there is a Moravi-E theory of spectra, which only carries around some data. And you might like an isomorphism, or at least some way of passing from E0 of X to E0 of P of X, which might be a spectral sequence. And to my mind, having sort of you'll have the correct category, target category, if you can use it to solve this problem. If the free objects, in some suitable sense, are exactly giving you this, at least in good enough cases. So let me state a way in which that's true. So, that would sort of be the Dyer-Lashoff algebra, together with congruence conditions. So I don't know, if you think about this in this classical way, you have a Dyer-Lashoff algebra, which is a nice algebra of operations. And so what I've really described by talking about things running in this category are ring operations. The ring operations on the Moravi-E theory of a commutative ring spectrum. those satisfy some congruences, and the whole battle is to sort of figure out how to describe those. That's what I'm trying to do here. Well, let me try to close this off. So this will be the last couple of boards. So I asserted that there's the Moravian E-theory of spectra, so its target category is called, well, I use sheaves for sheaves of rings, so I'll just write modules for sheaves of modules. So this will be a category of sheaves of quasi-coherent O-modules over M iso. So M was a pile, but inside the pile is a stack, which is classifies formal groups and isomorphisms. And then it's a standard fact that, in fact, the correct target for Morava E theory viewed as a functor from spectra that lands in this world. Essentially the same definition I wrote down. And some propositions. Let's go over here. Oh, first I need some subcategories. So pick sheaves from M. Here's a forgetful functor to mod M iso. Forget that it's a ring, forget that it's over isogenies. And let me put here, let me take some full subcategories, let's just say free here. These are going to be things, sheaves which are, so what does this mean? Full subcategory of objects such that, well, what I want to do is I want to take my sheaf and I want to evaluate the universal deformation. So there's some Lubin-Tate space associated to deformations of some given height n minus one formal height n formal group, and I want to take the universal deformation, and I'd like this to be, let's say, free as an LT gamma module. With a little bit of care, I can do this. This is not an Artinian local ring, but it's an inverse limit of Artinian local rings. So this is really an inverse limit. This forgetful functor has, and similarly here, this has a left adjoint. F. There's a monad on this guy, which I can prolong it to a monad T on the full category of modules. Oops, remove the word free. And then 3 says that there's a natural transformation. On the one hand, I can take the Moravian E theory of the free ring on some spectrum X, and I can compare that to T of the Moravian E theory of X, which is an object in here. And that natural transformation is not always an isomorphism. You wouldn't expect it to be. But it's an isomorphism if X has a nice Moravian E theory. So if the Moravian E theory of X is free over the ground ring and concentrated in even degrees. So in that sense, I can recover information about the Dyer-Lashov algebra, as you said, entirely from this algebraic set. What I've done is not ideal. I didn't tell you anything about, I sort of somehow specialized to degree zero, which is not really the thing you want to do. You want to deal with all degrees. I don't know how to deal with odd degree operations yet. There's just some things I don't know. There should be a story similar to this, so I left that out. So that's the end of my story. So this is an assertion that you can do the same thing for Moravian E theory that you did for equivariant K theory. Now, there are all these other beautiful equivariant theories we now have, equivariant elliptic cohomology. I don't know if there's an analogous story there, but this sort of offers at least a possibility of something to try. if you want to describe some algebraic category of operations on the homotopy of such things. So I'll stop there. Yeah. I don't know. That's an interesting idea. Because I'm really just doing algebra, right? I have K theory as some functor to rings. So I suppose you could think of it as a functor to some Pushl rings just by it's in there. I don't know. That's one way to think of it. Somehow for me, this is purely a question of algebra, and I haven't even tried to derive it in any direction. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah? Is there a story? I don't know, because I don't understand algebraic K-theory very well. So if I take classical algebraic K-theory, that's a lambda ring. There's no involution. It is a lambda ring, and therefore there must be some description. I don't know what the right thing to say is, what the useful thing to say for algebraic K theory would be. It's somewhat mysterious that algebraic K theory, you know, the classical algebraic K theory doesn't carry the involution. This was something from complex K theory. And if you don't have, I had to put that in to make a clean story. Because otherwise I would have to somehow distinguish between the nth power isology and the minus nth power isology on the multiplicative group. And it would be strange to do that, but apparently for algebraic K-theory, you have to somehow. Yeah?
Even for classical KG, I don't think there are lots of operations that really work out.
I don't know. I sort of hid something. I didn't tell you what the operations, what kind of operations algebra I was trying to do for algebraic K-theory. I mean, there are actually operations on equivariant K-theory, at least a few, that are I did not list. There's a psi zero in equivariant K-theory. I think I was trying, what I was computing were the operations on the orbifold K-theory of an orbifold E-infinity ring spectrum. I think that's what I was computing. But I don't know what an orbifold E-infinity ring spectrum is. So, but I think I would like to set up a perfect analogy between what I did for Morava E theory and the story for K theory, and I think that would be it. But if you actually think about operations on equivariant K theory, there are a few more floating around.